This is Vatican News. Catholic author and journalist Austin Ivory's follow-up to his critically acclaimed biography of Pope Francis will be on sale from November the 5th. As Ivory told me in the run-up to the book launch, Wounded Shepherd, Pope Francis, and his struggle to convert the Catholic Church takes the reader on a sometimes bumpy but riveting ride through some key issues and episodes that mark this papacy's reform in Rome and in the wider church.
This is in many ways the continuation of my biography, which was called The Great Reformer, which was mostly about his life before he became Pope. This is mostly about the pontificate. So it's what happened, in a way, with the reform over the last 6 years. But it has a very different title, Wounded Shepherd, Pope Francis and His Struggle to Convert the Catholic Church. And I explain in the book why I have a very different title from the first one. It's rather less, if you like, triumphalistic. And I think it partly reflects the problems and the resistances that he's faced, but also reflects something of his own thinking about his own leadership of the church, which I know from things he's told me and things he's told other people, that he doesn't sort of consider himself, in a way, as being the architect of change. The analogy I use in the book, actually, he's much more like a Jesuit spiritual director. So it's not the spiritual director who changes you when you go on a retreat. It's God, it's the Holy Spirit. But he facilitates, he guides, he points out the obstacles, he warns you against the temptations. And so I think that idea of his leadership is one of the big themes of the book, in a way. Who is this man, and how is he guiding the church, and what is he, in a way, asking of us, and what does he see the Holy Spirit asking of the church, is, I suppose, the central narrative of the book.
I read somewhere that it starts with a conversation between yourself and Pope Francis himself. How did that come about? Can you tell us about that conversation?
It was a meeting that came about, which was unforgettable for me. And in the end, we were about 45 minutes together in the Casa Santa Marta. And it came about, he actually had asked for it. And I wasn't sure, in a way, whether it was an interview or not. I had the recorder in my pocket, as I say in the book, and I never actually brought it out. And we spent a fascinating 45 minutes. And I say, you know, in the book, that the first thing he said to me was, you know, I've read various things that you've written about me, and I just have one criticism. And I kind of froze, thinking of all the mistakes I've made. And I thought, well, and then he smiled and he said, I think you're too kind to me. So I said, well, I promise to be a bit tougher on you in the future. And we had a good laugh. But then I used that to say, you know, things he then went on to say to me, that's when I say, you know, I've realised that he's a different kind of a leader. You know, he's not putting his own authority and prestige above the unity of the institution or above the institution itself. So it's a very different kind of leadership, rather fascinating. And I think, you know, I'm being asked actually to give a lot of talks at the moment on the Pope's leadership. People recognise that there is something in Francis that the world can learn from, that we can all learn from in leadership of institutions or countries. And I hope there are a few in Wounded Shepherd. I hope I draw out a few of those lessons for humanity.
Your great title, His Struggle to Convert the Catholic Church, actually contains a lot of controversy.
I mean, the point about a good book title is that it gives you then something to talk about. You know, I mean, the previous one was called Great Reformer, Pope Francis and the Making of a Radical Pope. And I remember a lot of the interviews and the talks I gave were about what do we mean by radical? You know, what do we mean by reform? And in this case, I mean, first of all, Wounded Shepherd, what does that mean about how he sees himself? About the, if you like, the theology of it, you know, and of course, the reason I called it Wounded Shepherd was that during the sex abuse crisis of last year, 2018, he talked a lot about the church having to face its wounds, the wounds of the victims, yes, but also the church's own wounds, and not to be afraid of facing those wounds, because that's part of the process of conversion. Well, one might say it's the first stage of conversion, is to honestly face our wounds, to accept the truth of our situation, and then in shame to invite the mercy of God then to transform us. That actually is how conversion happens, and that's how he's inviting the church, particularly as he spelled it out in that extraordinary speech he gave in Chile, Santiago de Chile, in January 2018. So that's the idea of this is a leadership which is not afraid of facing the wounds of the church and allowing God's grace to transform that. And so I think I quite like the fact that the title, you know, somebody might pick up the book and say, well, this sounds like a man who's sort of being heavily criticised and attacked, which, of course, is also true. But the woundedness, I think, is much deeper. It has a theological resonance.
You think he feels like a wounded shepherd?
Well, I think he's wounded in the sense that he's carrying the wounds of the church. You know, he's carrying the wounds of humanity. Actually, I mean, this is the Pope who goes to a refugee camp and cries with the refugees. He goes around Myanmar doing everything he can for the Rohingya, and then saying the name of God is Rohingya, and again being prepared to cry. You know, he's a Pope who in carrying the problems of the world is not afraid of the woundedness of the world, because he knows that we have a healer who can heal those wounds. It's a bit like the synod on the Amazon going on. You know, we are having now, you know, every day I'm here as a journalist, you know, at the press briefings, the wounds of this part of the world on display in a way that is beautiful, and their pastors are with them saying, how can we walk with them? How can we help to heal these wounds? So I think that courage, I suppose, in allowing brokenness to come forward is, I think, one of the marks of his pontificate. There's a boldness there, a willingness to face what for most people is too uncomfortable to face, that I think is an important part of his pontificate.
Can you tell us a little bit about the structure of your book? Is it divided into chapters or into topics?
Yeah, it's divided into chapters. So the previous book, which was a biography, was much easier to write because, of course, with the biography, you know where it begins and you know where it ends. And you can play around to some extent with the structure, which I did, but fundamentally it had that chronology. This one doesn't, because actually when I came to write the book, you know, and I've had to rewrite it endlessly because this is a pontificate in permanent motion. I've said sometimes it's been like trying to jump on a train, you know, and then just as you get to look round, it reaches the next station. So I really had to say, what are the most important stories of this pontificate? What will this pontificate be remembered for? What will people still be talking about, you know, in 10 years' time? And that's what I've tried to use to guide my chapter. So they're on themes, and the first chapters are quite focused on Rome, the financial reform, the curial reform, his battle, for example, over the Knights of Malta. And then we move into, we have a chapter on clerical sex abuse, a very important chapter, and then a whole chapter which I've called Close and Concrete, which is really about the pastoral conversion, which is, I suppose, the Latin American church's own discernment of modernity and how to evangelize the modern world, and how this has governed his choices of bishop and cardinal. So I've talked about the big shake-ups there. And then the sort of second half of the book is really, it's Laudato Si. There's a whole chapter on the origins of the ecology encyclical, where it came from. And I have a whole chapter on the synod. The book kind of ends with a chapter on mercy and Amoris Laetitia and some of the controversies around that, because I think in many ways that's the heart of the pontificates, where it all kind of comes together. And then I have an epilogue which brings it up to date, at least to about the summer of 2019. You know, it's very hard to get books completely up to date.
Just finally, you are a long-time Vatican watcher, a Pope watcher. Has Pope Francis's papacy changed your vision at all?
Oh, I think tremendously. I mean, I started to work on the biography really shortly after his election, and I went to Argentina and then published it a year later. And then really since then, you know, he's been at the centre of my life, and writing about the pontificate, giving talks and so on. And inevitably, I find myself constantly going to things that he said and has written as Pope, but also as Jesuit and as Cardinal Archbishop, and deeply shape my own thinking, to the point actually where I think to some extent I've ended up viewing the world a bit through his eyes. And I think that's kind of inevitable if you really try to enter under the skin, I think, of a very great person. And I've got no doubt about his greatness. You know, he's an extraordinarily brilliant man intellectually, in a way that actually people don't see, because his intelligence is such that he knows how to communicate as a pastor. But also I think his spiritual depth is extraordinary, his capacity for discernment, his ability to read history, to detect the motions of the spirit in the events and how the spirit is inviting the church to respond. It takes us to a depth of leadership which is very, very unusual in the world. I mean, certainly I think he will be seen actually as one of the great popes of this era.
And that was Austin Ivory, Catholic author and journalist.